This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Here's something I want you to sit with before we get into all of this. Most of us have something we wrote down that we would never read aloud. A journal entry from a night that got too dark. A text we drafted at 2 a.m. and deleted before the sun came up. Something we typed into the notes app on our phone, read back once, and closed immediately. Most of us have a version of our worst thoughts somewhere in writing. And most of us made peace with it by telling ourselves the same thing. That getting it out was the point. That putting it into words is how you keep it from becoming something else. That naming the darkness is how you keep it contained. It's a comforting idea. Most of the time, it's probably right. I mean, a lot of therapists will suggest to their clients when they're trying to deal with some sort of trauma or trying to communicate something that we want to express to an abuser or the things of that nature, of just writing it down for yourself in a letter that never gets sent. It's for you. It's the exercise of healing for oneself, because at the end of the day, getting that message to that person really doesn't make a goddamn bit of difference. It's about yourself. Brian Koberger put things in his words too. He left a documented trail of his own interior life, Reddit posts, academic writing, online activity. And what that trail shows is not what most people expect when they go looking. It doesn't show someone who had no idea what was happening inside of him. It doesn't show someone caught off guard by his own darkness. It shows someone who was paying very close attention to it, actually. Someone who could see himself with uncomfortable clarity. Who put that clarity into words. Who built an entire academic career around studying the thing he felt adjacent to, and who, according to prosecutors, walked into a house in Moscow, Idaho, in the early hours of November 13th, 2022, and killed 4 college students who had nothing to do with whatever he was carrying. The question I want to spend this episode on, and we got a series going on here this week on this, there'll be 5, not on the crime, not the evidence, not the timeline, it's this. What does it mean when a person can see exactly what is wrong with them, name it, study it, write about it with startling precision, and still not stop what's coming? Because I think that question belongs to a lot more people than Brian Koberger. I make sure to get your thoughts in the comment section on our Substack and on YouTube. The links are in the descriptions. There's a Reddit account connected to Koberger that journalists and researchers examined after his arrest. What those posts describe is not someone operating in the dark about his own interior experience. They describe someone mapping it. He wrote about empathy in a way that is almost clinical in its detachment, about watching other people experience emotional connection and not being able to access that experience himself. Not struggling to reach something, watching it. The way you watch something happening on the other side of a window. He was in the room. He just wasn't in the room. He wrote about social interaction as something he had to process differently. About feeling more like an observer of human experience than a participant in it. And here's the thing that gets me every time I sit with those posts. They don't read like a manifesto. They don't read like someone building towards something, leaving deliberate breadcrumbs. They read like someone genuinely trying to understand why he feels the way he feels, using the only tools he had available, words, the internet. The particular kind of distance that both provide when you're trying to look at yourself without flinching. He was trying to figure himself out. That method just never got him anywhere different, it seems. And then there's the academic path. Brian Koberger didn't stumble into criminology. He pursued it deliberately all the way to PhD program at the Washington State University, where he was studying the psychology of criminal behavior. At the moment of his arrest, he was academically immersed in understanding what drives people to cross lines, why people do the things most people never do. And I mean this, there are a lot of people who study criminology who will never hurt anyone. That field exists for real reasons, and most people in it are trying to prevent violence, not understand their own proximity to it. But when you place that academic choice on top of the written record, on top of someone who documented watching empathy from behind glass, what you get is not irony. What you get is information, a person who felt something misaligned in himself and chose, as his life's primary intellectual pursuit, the systematic study of people who act on that feeling. It's worth sitting with. Here's the thing about the, or at the center of this episode, and I'm going to give it to you pretty straight here. There's a difference, a significant, documented, quietly devastating difference between the insight and integration. Insight is a capacity to see yourself accurately, to identify the pattern, name the wound, describe the mechanism. Koberger appears to have had an unusual amount of it. Integration is what happens when that awareness actually changes something, when the knowing becomes living differently, when seeing yourself clearly leads somewhere other than just seeing yourself clearly. Most people assume those two things go together. They don't. Understanding something and changing it require completely different things from a person. Insight happens in the thinking, narrating part to the brain. Real change requires working with systems that don't respond to narrative, the nervous system, the automatic patterns laid down so early they feel like personality rather than behavior. The body that holds things, the mind, has already explained away. You can understand your way around a problem for decades without that understanding touching the system that actually runs the problem. This is why people can talk about their childhood in therapy for years and still flinch at the sound of a certain tone of voice. The flinch isn't coming from the part of the brain that understands things. There's a specific defense mechanism worth naming here called intellectualization. It's what happens when someone uses analysis and academic frameworks to create distance from the emotional reality of something, to think about the thing instead of feeling it, to understand it instead of reckoning with it. It looks like insight. It produces the vocabulary of insight. It gets mistaken for genuine self-awareness constantly. By the time the person doing it, or by the person doing it, and by everyone around them, the signs of it are specific once you know what you're looking for. The person who can explain the problem with precision but cannot sit with the feeling underneath it. They accumulate frameworks rather than experiences. They pursue understanding as a destination rather than as a tool for getting somewhere. They're brilliant at mapping their own patterns and haven't disrupted one of them. And the understanding, detailed, accurate, sophisticated, functions as the substitute for the harder, slower, more uncomfortable work of actual change. Koberger's path may fit this pattern. The academic study of criminal psychology is a way of creating intellectual proximity to something he felt inside himself while maintaining enough structural distance to keep functioning. The framework instead of the reckoning. I want to stop talking about Brian Koberger for just a minute, because this is where it stops being about him and it starts being about the people in your life, maybe about you. How many people do you know who are brilliant explainers of their own damage and have not changed a single thing? I'm not asking rhetorically. I want you to actually think of someone. The friend who has read every book about toxic relationships, who can identify the patterns before you finish describing the situation, who left and rebuilt the exact same dynamic somewhere else within 18 months, who can tell you in clinical detail exactly why she keeps choosing this and chooses it again anyway. The family member who knows he has a temper, who has a sophisticated and accurate understanding of where it comes from, what it's protecting, what the childhood chapter looks like. Lucille blows everything up when the pressure gets high enough, who apologizes afterward with genuine remorse and genuine understanding and does it again at the next holiday. A person who's been in therapy for years, who speaks fluent psychology, who can describe her attachment wounds with the precision of someone who has read every book and done every worksheet, who has not changed the fundamental pattern in any relationship she's been in. This is not judgment. This is one of the hardest things about being human. And most of us have been this person in at least one corner of our lives. The thing we understand about ourselves perfectly and have not changed. The insight that sits there accurate and useless while we keep living the same pattern in slightly different clothes. The knowing that somehow never becomes different doing. I've been that person. I'd be surprised if you haven't too. For most of us, that gap between knowing and changing produces frustration. Stagnation. Kind of low-grade suffering. That's painful and costly and stays contained within our own lives. We stay stuck. We keep hurting. We maybe eventually find a way through, or maybe we don't. But the consequences belong to us. For a smaller number of people, the gap can go somewhere darker. When self-awareness is high and the capacity for genuine empathic connection is limited. When someone can observe themselves clearly but cannot feel the pull toward other people that normally functions as a brake on dark impulses. The understanding doesn't generate remorse or correction. It just generates more understanding, more observation, more framework, more watching from a clinical distance that never closes into something human enough to interpret anything. I'm not diagnosing Brian Koberger. I don't have access to the full picture of his psychology, and neither does anyone outside the clinical and legal processes working through it right now. What I'm saying is that his documented record raises a question that deserves an honest answer and doesn't have one yet. What do we do with people who can see their own darkness clearly and cannot integrate that seeing into a different life? What is the promise of self-awareness actually worth when the self-doing, the seeing, never manages to become something different? We built an entire culture, therapy, self-help, personal development, the whole industry of psychological literacy on the premise that awareness is the first step, that if you can see the problem, you're closer to solving it. That insight is the beginning of change. Koberger's documented record challenges that premise in a way that is genuinely uncomfortable if he had let it land, not because he's the only example, he isn't, but because the stakes of the gap between his insight and his integration were ultimately catastrophic for four people who were asleep in their own home. Ethan Chapin, Zanna Kernodle, Madison Moga, and Kaylee Gonsalves, four young people who had nothing to do with whatever he was trying to understand about himself. There's no clean place to land this one. It's not supposed to be. He saw himself. He wrote it down. He studied it. And according to prosecutors and his own words, he walked into that house anyway. Somewhere in the distance between those three things is a question that awareness alone will never answer. What do you do when someone, when you, knows exactly what is wrong and cannot seem to make it right? What does it mean that understanding something fully is not the same as being free of it? No, no. I think the people who tell you they do are the ones who haven't sat with it long enough. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. It's an interesting look at someone like Koberger, someone who seemed to be able to document his feelings, his thoughts. He knew his deficiencies, but he didn't He never seemed to take any of the things he learned and apply them in a way that would better his life, better his understanding, better his modality in the world. Or maybe he didn't want to. Your thoughts in the comments section. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.